Today is Friday. It's February 5th, 2016. Is that flamboyant enough for you, Eric Zorn?
Yes, I love it.
I'm John Williams. Eric Zorn is joining us now on the Mincing Rascals podcast. Eric wants us to do a more bombastic or flamboyant open to kind of get the energy going in the room. Steve Bertrand joins us for the Mincing Rascals podcast every Friday, and he's here today, too. Hi, Steve.
Hello, John Williams.
That's Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio. Eric Zorn, a columnist for the Chicago Tribune, also joining us, columnist and editorial writer from the Chicago Tribune, Kristen McQuarrie. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, John.
You know what's disappointing to me? After all of the talk and all of the months of presidential politicking, it's in fact going to be predictable. It's going to be Marco Rubio for the Republicans. It's going to be Hillary Clinton for the Democrats. And all of the fun, all of the thought we've given to how interesting it would be to have a Donald Trump or whatever Bernie Sanders represents, we're not going to have any of that. This is all going to be forgotten. You guys agree with me on that?
No.
I don't know. I think it's still a lot of ping pong left. You've got a bunch of southern state primaries coming up. Trump could have a resurgence. Ted Cruz is still hanging in there. He's a little bit to the right of Rubio. So I wouldn't write off the GOP side, but I agree with you. I think Bernie's little run is going to be over.
Although I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I heard reference to a new Quinnipiac poll today that showed them both in the 40s, almost within the margin of error, a national poll.
Who? A national poll between
Sanders.
Hillary
Sanders
and Bernie.
Yeah, which really surprised me. Mm. I mean, I think she still has the organization. I think she's going to win, but like, that's that's how it happened 8 years ago.
No, I think that's how it happened 10 minutes ago when we realized Trump actually, despite generating interest, actually can't convert that into votes. And I worry about that for Bernie because I'm now feeling the burn, Steve. I'm
kind
of like, well, I just want to try something different, anything different. And I talked to President Jefferson about this the other day, and he said that really a very good or very bad president won't make us or break us. So we could put up with the Bernie Sanders and we could survive a Donald Trump, so to speak.
I don't necessarily agree with that.
And I also don't agree that Donald Trump is done yet. I mean, I think maybe he was proven fallible there, but he lost to a religious conservative in a religiously conservative state. And Ben Carson almost quit right before the caucusing, apparently.
Just running home to get the change of clothes,
right,
Steve.
Right.
He went to Florida to get new clothes, and then the Trump campaign.
Rubio.
The Cruz campaign sent out a notice saying that he's quitting, Carson is, and maybe that sent some of the votes Cruz's way, and Trump wants a recount or a do-over in Iowa.
Trump needs to stop taking it quite so seriously. This is a long battle. They came within a couple of percentage points of each other. The winner of Iowa is not predictive. He just needs to move on with his campaign and see if he can put it together in New Hampshire. He is set up there to have a fall because he had such a big lead in the polls going into this primary. And now, you know, we're looking a couple of days from now, and those polls are tightening. Rubio is advancing on him. And the expectations game, I mean, he lost the expectations game in Iowa.
He almost finished third,
but the polls a week before said he was going to be in second, or 2 weeks before. The Des Moines Register poll a week before had him leading. But, I mean, he handled it so well on the night of the caucuses. And then the next morning I saw him on TV, he handled it well. You don't think so?
No, he did.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right, but then he blew
somewhere,
it all.
Somewhere between 10 a.m. on Wednesday or Tuesday and 2 p.m., something happened, and he just kind of reversed course again.
It really does remain to be seen whether he can translate this enthusiasm, these big crowds, into, you know, getting out the vote in primary states. I think the big test is South Carolina. That if he continues to do well there, he's going to have a strong social conservative challenge from Ted Cruz. And if he can,
it's Bush country too. It's one of Bush's stronger states.
I think Bush may be gone by then. I really do.
No, I think he's banking on if he doesn't do well there, he could be gone.
Please
think
clap.
That will. But what we'll miss when these other candidates start to peel off is something that I saw described in the paper this week as the circular firing squad of the Republican Party. All of them just taking shots at each other and dodging and weaving. And it's been great theater and drama, you know. I don't know if that's the best way to find who should be president of the United States, but it's sure been kind of fun.
It's happening in the Democratic Party, too.
Just now it's starting.
There are just fewer shooters.
Fewer
It's a duel. It's a duel.
I have heard from a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters in the past week. Last Sunday, I did a column essentially telling Democrats that it's time to get serious and realize that if you nominate Bernie Sanders, he's probably going to lose all 50 states. And I love a lot of what the guy says. I believe in single-payer health care. I think that money is poisonous to our politics. I like to see Wall Street regulated more. A lot of these things I believe in. I think college, if they can have some free, not every public college, but, you know, I like those ideas, but I realize that politically they're very difficult. Economically, they're very difficult. And that when you have someone like Hillary Clinton, she's probably going to be the better candidate to win against whatever Republican candidate that goes up against. I heard from so many people from the Sanders campaign saying, you know, oh, you're so such a cynic. You're part of the establishment. There's no difference between Hillary Clinton and those Republicans. And we're going to vote right in the Green Party, or we're just going to write Sanders' name on the ballot because we're never going to vote for Hillary Clinton.
How about this? Clinton could probably initiate more of Sanders' agenda than Sanders could as president, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely.
If we could do, pretend 8 years or 4 years from now, the world's more likely to look like Sanders' vision if Clinton is president than if he is president.
And I got to say,
that's an interesting point.
Did any of you watch this debate last night, the Democratic debate?
I did not.
John,
I did not. I feel like I just got caught not doing my homework.
All right. Okay. Well, I will then summarize for our listeners. No, essentially, I mean, it was like, I'm progressive. No, I'm more progressive. They were very much trying to stake out that territory on the left. Bernie Sanders has already won an incredible victory by pulling Hillary Clinton away from the center to focus on some of these issues that are really important to the progressive community. It was an amazingly liberal debate last night. Trying to get to the left of each other in a lot of issues.
Yeah, I read the summaries of it, and that was the thing. I thought, Hillary, I don't know that you need to win a match on who can go the farthest to the left. You only got to beat one guy. You can beat Bernie Sanders. And if you paint yourself as too progressive in the primary, that'll haunt you in the general. I was a little surprised that that's the way the game was playing out. I didn't think she had to win that debate. You know what I mean? At least not on those terms.
No, but she doesn't. She doesn't want to. She wants the people feeling the burn to vote in November too, and if she doesn't, sort of indoctrinate herself with Bernie Sanders supporters and say, "I see your vision," that could cost her.
At one point, Sanders said, either Senator Clinton or I are 100 times better than anyone that Republicans are going to nominate, which is something that I actually echoed back to one of these Sanders supporters who's been bugging me by email, saying, "Look, I know you're for Sanders. That's fine. I'm not saying don't be for Sanders. I'm saying be real about this and don't confuse the don't say, oh, John Kasich is just like Hillary Clinton. That's just completely not true."
Have you been overwhelmed by Bernie Sanders supporters? I read a piece in Vox today about that there are these cadres of people, and if someone in the media says something bad about Sanders, that they just jump on him and sort of overwhelm them.
Yes.
Have you seen that?
It's just like what Ron Paul had back in the 2012 election cycle. When I wrote a column critical of Ron Paul saying that he was just a flash in the pan. I was just inundated with letters from these people. It's quite impressive, actually.
Is it genuine or is it organized?
Well,
I think
the people who are writing are genuinely. I don't think they're faking it, but they're organized. Yeah, they are organized, and it's great they're organized. It's great they're part of this process. I don't have anything. I didn't like Ron Paul that much, but I do like a lot of what Bernie Sanders says. I just don't. He's not going to be the president of the United States.
Well, if you like progressive ideas, Eric, and you do, I just want to give you guys three words to mince on, and then we'll talk about it probably never. Ranked choice voting. I sent Eric an email about this week. Ranked choice voting. We have it in Minnesota. Other states and cities have it as well. And that means that if you can go ahead and vote for Bernie Sanders, and then when they count the votes, you go, well, Bernie Sanders actually finished last. Okay, then we take the person who finished last off, and then we count your next vote. And that could be for Hillary Clinton, or it could be for Bingo the dog. But anyway, it gives you the opportunity to vote for candidates that will not win traditionally. And you don't want to vote for them because you think, well, my vote's not going to count. Why would I vote for Bernie Sanders? But you can. If he finishes at the bottom, then they'll take your next vote, your second vote. And then you keep doing that until somebody gets a majority. That's how we elect the mayor in Minneapolis. Minneapolis elects its mayor that way.
It's also called instant runoff voting, I think. It's the same idea, right?
Perhaps, yeah. I mean, if we're talking about the same thing, call it what you will. Here we call it ranked choice voting. But it's a very interesting and not illegal idea. But it gives you a chance to vote, say, three times on the election. Who would be your first, second, and third choice? You could say, I like Rubio. No, no. You more to the point, you could say, I like Trump. I want to vote for Trump. But I don't think Trump's going to win. So I don't want to vote for Trump. I want to throw my vote with somebody who I think is going to win. Well, go ahead and vote for Trump. And then if Trump doesn't win, they'll take your second place vote or your third place vote. Just an idea.
Here's the answer to that is two words. Harold Washington.
Yeah, why?
Harold Washington would not have been elected mayor of Chicago if we'd had preferential voting back in, was it, 82?
You mean because he won by a narrow margin with 83. Three candidates?
Or well, there were two white candidates, Jane Byrne and Rich Daley, and him, and he won with like 31% of the vote. I am sure that the second choice of most of those white voters who voted for Rich Daley was Byrne and vice versa, so that if you had had that ranked voting, it's probably
he would not have won. Yeah, but and the question is, all right, well, then what's the better reflection of the will of the people? And maybe it wouldn't be Harold Washington.
I'm not saying it's a perfect answer to your – I'm just saying that as an answer is that it does –
Yeah, but if you want to distill what the will of the people is, maybe the fact that Harold Washington won or Jesse Ventura became governor – Minnesota once upon a time with less than 40% of the vote, maybe that's think about it. 60+% of the people of Minnesota said they didn't want Ventura, and most people said they didn't want Harold Washington. If you had ranked choice voting, Washington and Ventura would not have won, and that would have appeased the largest percentage of people. Okay, you guys ready for your next subject here?
Hit us.
Krista McQuarrie wrote about Mike Madigan and the stranglehold he has on state politics today. What an interesting piece. Why don't you give us a summary of it first?
You know, it actually came about from my colleague Eric Zorn during an editorial board meeting, because I always make the argument that there is one person that is, you know, has the stranglehold on government. And Eric was making the point that you remove Mike Madigan and replace him with somebody else, you're still going to have the same stalemate. And I don't agree with that. I think Madigan is a unique figure. He's been the House Speaker for, I think, 32 of the last 40 years that he's been in Springfield, 45. And so every part of state government, he has his fingers in. And so I reference the House rules, which each General Assembly every 2 years passes the House rules, and they basically dictate how a bill is introduced and passed. And it just shows he has his thumb on everything that happens in Springfield, every step of the way. And really, to me, there's no question that not only does he have the most control, but he bears the most responsibility for the condition that the state of Illinois is in now.
You said nothing gets to the governor that doesn't first get through Madigan. You said Madigan has ignored legislation to raise the minimum wage, pass a progressive income tax, institute term limits, reform the redistricting process, allow for an elected school board in Chicago, and end the city's red light camera program. And that's not all you said. I mean, really, you paint a picture of him as the most powerful gatekeeper in the state of Illinois, right?
Well, he is, in my opinion. And I point out those progressive agenda items because Mike Madigan is a Democrat. And there's this belief that somehow he is, you know, representing the middle class and representing these populist ideas, when in fact he uses his own rules to not put things in front of the people. And he uses that, you know, these are Democratic principles mantra as a reason that he keeps blocking Bruce Rauner's agenda, the Republican governor, when in fact he blocks his own, you know, progressive wing of his own party's agenda routinely.
Yeah, when I saw that, I thought, wait a minute, those sound like Democratic ideas.
They
to
are.
Me. You think
that's why
he would like
out.
Those mm-hmm. ideas? Yeah.
Well, I found my colleague's arguments pretty persuasive, actually, in terms of Madigan's power and his unique power in the state. I will say, though, that on some of these key points that are creating the stalemate in Illinois, the union rules, the right to work zones, the workers' comp things, that the Democratic Party is fairly united on those. I don't think that if Madigan were to resign tomorrow to spend more time with his family, that you would suddenly have a new leader come in and say, okay, we're going to make deals with Governor Rauner on these key sticking points.
That wasn't
points.
The point. I hear no. you, but that wasn't the point.
No, I know it wasn't the point. But so I say, I think you made an excellent argument that Madigan is like I say, uniquely powerful, maybe in Illinois history as a speaker. On the other hand, I'm not sure that fundamentally changes the dynamic that's holding us back right now.
Well, then what is the point, Kristen?
Just that I think it helps readers. So I've followed Springfield for 20 years. I was down there a lot early in my career and watched the committee process. The column I wrote was just sort of like an instructional, here is what actually happens day to day in Springfield. And I'm told by readers that those kinds of columns are helpful because they really don't understand the process. They're not sure why Madigan has so much power. And so that was kind of the basis of the piece. It has gotten some criticism for exactly what Eric is saying, that you swap him out, you're not going to get a Democrat speaker who's going to all of a sudden be for right to work and break the stalemate. But I think I was just trying more to kind of lay more blame at the feet of Mike Madigan, deservedly so, than some people are willing to admit.
Well, you described the playbook that the House has versus the Senate and how not only is it longer, the rules book, but that it's peppered with, you know, at the discretion of the speaker, things like that. And I guess I always thought that, or we've sort of noticed that, but your piece sort of laid out the why of it. And it did make you hope that, I don't know, he wants his daughter to become governor someday and he'll step aside sooner than later. I've always thought he was an impediment to, I don't know, the better lives of the people of Illinois. That's probably too grand a statement, but I got to tell you, I've never been a fan, never been a fan. And maybe that's not fair. I don't know.
No, it's not. It's not personal. I don't have anything personal against Madigan. I just think he's been down there too long. Anybody who had the amount of power that he's had and has served that long in government and where people defer to you all the time, it's toxic. It changes you. It changes your outlook. I just don't think he's in it anymore and hasn't been for decades, you know, to actually help the people. He's there to help, you know, keep Democrats in power and himself.
Well, yeah. So that's the question. What is he for?
He's for a majority, keeping a majority in the House.
That's it.
That's
sad, isn't it? That's just little petty politics, isn't it, Kristen? I mean, are you really think it's that shallow?
I do. And I say this based on having conversations with, you know, he doesn't have a wide circle of people whom he trusts. He's not in it for policy. He does not care about policy. If he did, we wouldn't have, you know, $111 billion in unfunded pension liabilities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He cares. I mean, every vote that is taken, every roll call, the committee structure that I talk about, it is all in place to ensure, you know, each member's reelection.
Well, and I would add to this that this is like in some ways a companion piece to something I wrote a couple of weeks ago saying, I can't define for you what Mike Madigan's agenda is for the future of Illinois. I mean, we know his agenda is to hang on to power. But what is his agenda for bringing business back here, for bringing back up the middle class, for, you know, solving the pension problem? I can't articulate that. And I follow this stuff not quite as closely as Kristen does, but very closely. And I can't tell you what that is. I can't tell you what the Democratic turnaround agenda is. And I think that's a problem when you're trying to sort of pick sides and figure out what's going on here. Okay, if I don't like what Rauners wants to do, but I know something has to be done other than we're not going to change anything, things are going fine, which they're not. The Democrats have, I think, failed to articulate what their vision is. And I think one of the real reasons that Kristen's column points out today is that Madigan is all about control, and it's unclear what he's using that control for. If you're talking about using it for the good of the state and the good of the people, not just
It's about painful decisions. Let me segue to your piece in today's Tribune too, Eric, because you described the situation that the public schools find themselves in, and you say at the end of the day, if I can paraphrase what you said, nobody's been willing to make the painful decisions that need to be made. You describe it as the magical thinking that they have, where things are eventually going to get better, but they've been progressively getting worse. Right, Eric?
Well, what's happened, yes, you look back and you say every time that we make these decisions, like we take a pension holiday or we don't raise property taxes, but we raise the cost of schools or we cut a sweet deal with the teachers in order so that we don't have a teacher strike. And keep thinking, well, things will get better, the economy will improve, we'll turn around, somewhere that money is going to come from. And that really came home this week. The schools borrowed, what was the total, $725 million, I want to say. But if you look at what that's going to cost, paying it back over time, it's going to cost $1.8 billion. And it's just to keep the lights on. This isn't for, like, building new schools. This is just to pay their current bills. It's like—
It's to pay their debt.
Well, yeah,
it's
exactly.
It's not even really going to cover. It'll cover payroll for a short time, but it's
really— Think about that. $725 million you need will cost you $1.1 billion.
$1.8.
Well, but I mean, the total bill will be $1.8, but I presume that includes $725 million of the principal.
Oh, yes,
right?
Yes. Are you? I'm sorry. Yes, you're right.
So the cost of using $700 million is $1.1
billion. Right.
That seems to be a step in the wrong direction.
That goes right to the banks, yeah.
And that's the best we can get. That's the way we're going
to
do it, huh?
So we have to pay 8% interest on stuff, 8.5% interest, because everyone's afraid we're going to go bankrupt.
You know, there's a scene in the... Are you guys watching the O.J. Simpson or Bernie Madoff series at all?
No, but I hear about it.
It's really good, the O.J. Simpson one was. And it was a two-part series. You can still watch it on NBC, probably.
The Madoff?
The Madoff series. It was 4 hours, so it was two-hour nights. Anyway, there's a scene where his wife, Bernie Madoff's wife, turns to him in prison and says, "Why did you do it?" And he used your line. He said, "People like the magic, Eric. They don't want to suffer loss. They don't want to suffer poor returns." So he just kept making up this Ponzi scheme to make everybody happy, kicking the can sort of down the road and creating fictional returns. And that made people happy. He used the word magical thinking just the way you did in your column today. By the way, that O.J. Simpson thing, you guys, you need to catch up on that. I think for the next 10 weeks, everybody's going to be talking about that the way they were Making a Murderer or something. This one is going to have more legs than
except we know who did it this time.
But it's very interesting to go sort of behind the scenes or just relive that story.
Okay, but I'm hearing it's like sort of over the top, like telenovela sort of thing. Is it or no?
I didn't get that feeling. I know what you mean by that, but it's not that. Maybe it's a little too dramatic for people's sake, but it's a hell of a story. I mean, you know, they could downplay it. It would still be amazing theater. I mean, in the first episode, O.J. Simpson leaves with Al Cowlings. They head out in the white Bronco, and that's where the end of the first of the 10 episodes goes. So obviously it's going to be about the... Not so much the murder or the chase. It's going to be about the court drama that takes place. And I think some of the performances, with maybe the exception of John Travolta, were really good. Rotten Tomatoes, 96% approval rating.
Wow.
Off the charts, yeah. Yeah. Hey, which kind of leads me down the end of the podcast where I ask you guys to tell us what you're reading, listening to, or watching. But let me just throw one quick thing at you if I can, and that is the I-55 expansion. There was a proposal. Was it the governor that put it forward this week, Steve Bertrand? The
governor had an event and said he's working with some lawmakers and wants. And it's a private partnership, private-public partnership, I think, to do it.
Right, yeah. So they would have an extra lane on the Stevenson from all the way out, like 355, all the way into the Dan Ryan. It'd be 25 miles, and it'd be one extra lane in each direction. You would pay a toll to drive in that extra lane. Do you guys like that idea conceptually? If they could make it work, you know, financially.
Can I just say, this is from the guy who's feeling the burn, right? You want the rich to get to work quicker?
It would be the rich enjoy life. Yeah, you haven't heard me say that I love it yet, Steve, but I'm asking you guys if you like the idea. Steve, you're saying no?
I don't. I'd like to see an extra lane. I'm not sure I like the idea of a graduated toll like that.
Yeah, that's what it would be. And if it's really, really busy, it would be really, really expensive to drive in that lane. The proposal
surge
would be,
pricing on the expressway?
It's exactly what it is. If you could get your Uber in there and just pay a fortune. So, Kristen, do you like the idea
No, I don't.
Why are you guys so down on this? Chicago is nothing but congestion.
I mean, I would want to see the details of how much the private part of this is going to weigh in and what that company is going to get in return. You know, we've sold off our assets. We give away the Skyway. I mean, I would want to know the details of it. But also, I don't really think government needs to keep stepping in to help people's commutes. I mean, if you choose to live 50 to 55 miles outside of the city limits and work downtown, then you know what? You're going to be sitting in traffic. And if you're deciding not to take the train, you're going to sit in traffic. It's not my job as a taxpayer to get you to move closer to the city. There are plenty of suburbs that are nice, you know, ringing the city. It's not our job to get you there quicker. We already have a dedicated bus lane that taxpayers heavily subsidize that takes a suburban pace bus that is supposed to help solve this problem, get people out of their cars. It's not working. I mean, it's not paying for itself. So,
if something like this could pay for itself, though, would that change your mind at all?
It might, but I guess I just never see anything that actually does pay for itself.
That's a good point.
Well, and all the land acquisition and all the resources that the state would put into something like this that maybe you can't put on a cocktail napkin.
There's nothing pretty on the Stevenson from the Dan Ryan to 355. It's rail yards and sad-looking lots of land. I say we doze them and build a damn lane.
All right.
That's But I would also suggest this. I lived for 15 years in LaGrange Park, which is not 50 miles out. It's about 15 miles mm-hmm. out. And it's still door to door. Most days, you know, 40 minutes.
Right. So do we just add another lane to the Eisenhower? I mean, I
would be okay if you could do that. Sure.
It doesn't help, though. You're not really solving the problem of getting people out of their cars by just continuing to add lanes. I mean, the Dan Ryan got completely reconstructed. That's what I take every day. I'm 16 miles outside of the city, and I sit in traffic, but I don't expect anybody to start airlifting me from my house, you know, directly to work so that I have a shorter commute.
You're in the city, though. You're 16 miles from downtown.
Correct.
You're
I'm in the city.
You're a city resident, right.
All right, let's go to your recommendations for the week.
Oh, so, that was clear.
I know. I'm so grumpy today.
That's okay, but I think you guys are right. Why would you be against it if it was not going to cost us an arm and a leg? Everything costs us an arm and a leg, so I'd be dubious about that. But if they could make it work in theory, I sure wouldn't be against it. Steve Bertrand, let's start with you. What are you reading, listening to, or watching that you want to pass along this week?
I've got something this week, and it's something right in front of my nose. You know, I love politics. I love those shows, and I think that Morning Joe on MSNBC, do you guys watch it at all?
Occasionally.
I know you do, yeah.
You watch it, Eric? No.
I actually don't.
I think it's the best show on TV. And I think, you know, you've got a former Newt Gingrich Republican, this Joe Scarborough, is the host. He's surrounding himself with liberals and Republicans. They get real newsmakers. They have legitimate conversation. They genuinely disagree, but then agree, you know, they in a congenial way, by and large. It's an informative show, and it's unlike any show that's on right now. And so I watch it all day, or I listen to it, and that's my recommendation. Morning Joe, yeah. Especially if you're interested in the political
news. How do you listen to it? You mean, is it on?
It's on satellite radio.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, no kidding. Really? Yeah. They just do the feed, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
The audio of it?
Yeah.
Wow. How about you, Kristen? What are you liking this week?
Well, I just watched the 30 for 30 ESPN show on the 85 Bears win last night.
Yeah.
Really
yeah.
good. I mean, I have to say it didn't tug at my heartstrings as much as some of the other 30 for 30s, but that is just an excellent series. And with the Super Bowl Sunday, you got to watch it.
Yeah. A friend of mine said, ESPN, you've got to watch 30 for 30 right now. He sent me a note last night and I haven't caught it yet. It is kind of weird, though, isn't it, how this city still clings to the 85 Bears?
Because it's all we got. It's the only Super Bowl win in franchise history.
One of the greatest NFL teams ever. So, I get it. But there's something kind of pathetic about how we're still clinging to the 85 Bears.
You're right. It's so true.
What about you, Eric?
We still would be, even if was it 2007 we went? I think even
right.
if,
yeah, even if
that
won
team had
one.
Won, I think the 85 Bears would still have a special
okay,
place.
Okay, but wait, so the 85 Bears are 30 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm. 31. Yeah, so, 30 years. Right,
so that would have been like an 85 us worshiping the 1955 Bears.
Exactly.
You know, think of that.
Exactly. And you go, wow, Grandpa, what else you got?
But it's, I was in grade still school working. During the 85 Bears. Yeah. I didn't remember it then, but it was fun to watch all the footage because they were really good.
And they also had such great personalities, right? Right. I mean, just such an interesting characters. From McMahon and Peyton on down, just one great story.
You know, I worked with that team.
That's
beginning
right, yeah.
2 years later and traveled with them. And
wow.
it was a rock star. It was like getting off the bus with Mick Jagger in every city. And there were like 10 or 15 Mick Jaggers on that bus. It just was phenomenal. Just a phenomenal time.
It's important to remember that Refrigerator Perry seemed large at the time, but he would be small by today's standards for defensive linemen. He was only about 300 pounds, right? And most of them are like 320 now.
I'm still upset they didn't let Walter score a touchdown in that game. You know,
they addressed that. You got to watch it. They talk a lot about that. Mm-hmm.
How about you, Eric? What are you recommending?
The 49th most popular podcast in America this week is something called Sleep With Me, which is a fascinating podcast. And it's a podcast that's meant to be listened to if you're having trouble falling asleep. And this guy tells these stories that are like...
It seemed to be self-defeating,
well,
but go ahead.
No, but they're he's got this
Are
kind
we
of,
on it?
He's got this kind of... you know, maybe we got a franchise
I think
here.
I think this has been one of your picks before.
No,
this
it hasn't been. I just discovered this. And the guy he tells these stories, and they're filled with, like, detail that's kind of like the way a boring person kind of goes off in these tangents. And people in the reviews, they say, you know, I can't, for 10 minutes, he's got this kind of droning voice, but it's not deliberately droning. It's just you listen to it and you're just like, oh, my God. And people swear by it. It's a great way to get to sleep, called Sleep With Me.
Try this
it.
Guy will put you to sleep.
He will put you to sleep.
My recommendation is going to be based on that Bernie Madoff series, which wasn't as good as the O.J. Simpson one is going to be, I don't think. But there's a book called Wizard of Lies. It's written by a New York Times reporter, and she had access to Bernie Madoff when he went off to jail exclusive. She interviewed him and really tells the whole back and front story about what happened with Bernie Madoff. And since that's on my mind, I'm actually interviewing her soon again. I went back and I've been reading the book, and it's very interesting. If you like great financial reporting or this storytelling, I mean, it's a little bit like The Big Short or something like that. You would do a lot worse than to read a book called The Wizard of Lies. It's about Bernie Madoff. And that's our podcast for this week. Thank you, Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio, Steve Bertrand on Books, and Steve Bertrand Travel, and Eric Zorn and Kristen McQuarrie from the Chicago Tribune. You can read them on that site and catch their columns and editorials there. I'm John Williams, and on Facebook, I'm King John. Our producer is Kristen Decker. Thank you, Kristen. And I think that's Bob Ferguson. Is Bob Ferguson on the dials over there, Steve?
Yes.
Is he spinning them? Thank you, Mr. Ferguson, for engineering this podcast. Remember, you can always subscribe to it and download it automatically each week. We are the Mincing Rascals.
You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you!
Hey, are you up all night tossing, turning, mind racing, trouble getting to sleep, trouble falling asleep? Well, welcome. This is Sleep With Me, the podcast that's here to put you to sleep.